Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Happy Valley United, the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. For more info, go to happyvalleyunited.com.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante, along with good friend Steve Pavlik. Steve, it's been way too long since we've had you on.
It has been. If I think back to the last time I was on, I believe they had just made the athletic department the decision to move on from James Franklin. A lot's happened since then. But, you know, I am in an unusual position because I'm very optimistic. So maybe we can talk about
that. Our listeners won't know what to do. Yes, this is the same Steve. We're not used to the optimistic glass half full Steve. That'll be a lot of fun. But you know what, Steve? I can't help myself. First, I got to go down the other route here. Are you still doing your, victory lap for after James Franklin is gone?
Well, again, if people have listened to the show for a while, you know my thoughts on Franklin. I was not surprised the way his tenure ended. Look, I will just say this. You know, I think after 12 years with Franklin, there was a lot of hype. At least in my opinion. And I think that really came to a head at this season. Again, maybe changing roles. Now, I think there's a lot of hope with Campbell coming in. You know, you have a new coach, a new approach. And, you know, I'm willing to, I guess at this point, buy in, give the guy a chance. And look, if you look at the schedule next year, I mean, that's pretty favorable too. So, you know, I think one of the criticisms of many I had with Franklin was we never had an identity. And I'm hoping Coach Campbell can build one. And, you know, being into this lack of identity, one thing Franklin was known for was not only his underachievement, but I think the team's underachievement. You know, it's easier for me as a fan to get behind, you know, some of these three stars that are overachievers. You go back to history at Penn State, guys like Tyler Warren, Paul Posluszny, there's a long history. I think Allen Robinson, somebody had it up the other day, and I thought it was really interesting. Not all the three stars are going to pan out to have that level of success. But again, just personally as a fan, I've always found it easier to get behind a team and a program that's more overachieving. And I'm looking forward to that because that's not been the case with Franklin.
Well, we're going to get to kind of that three-star conversation because I think it's really fascinating. And especially in light of all the players coming from Iowa State who pretty much are all three-star recruits, but we'll get there. Now, you know, just to put a bow on the whole, James Franklin conversation, I've always been much more an advocate of him than you are or were. I do think with that said, though, the time had come. He had, the UCLA game, the Northwestern game, that reached a point where you don't have the talent that Penn State has versus those teams and lose those games back-to-back, unless there's something more going on. There's more issues with this team. And let's face it, over the last several years, essentially the MO has been beating the teams you were favored to beat, losing the teams that you were underdogs to. But when you start losing those games when you're, a 20-some point favorite, something has to happen, and it did. So that was the, I think everyone was pretty much in agreement there. Let's now go to, because you and I haven't spoken since then. Mm-hmm. First of all, there was the process of getting Matt Campbell here. A lot of Penn State fans got very impatient. I think, Steve, a little bit of the confusion from the Penn State fans where there was this, oh, they got rid of James Franklin early so they could get ahead of everybody. No. They got rid of him because they had to get rid of him at that point. I don't think there was ever going to be a hire in the middle of the season because you would just eliminate anyone who's currently a coach. I just am curious of your whole reaction during that time frame where it seemed like forever we were waiting for a coach, new coach to get here.
Right, because I think last time we spoke was literally right after they just made that decision. I think like many Penn State fans, I thought the decision would be wrapped up earlier than it was. Look, I don't know that Pat Kraft necessarily wrapped himself in glory with the process. But look, the important thing is that you got a good result in the end, maybe despite your best efforts, which is why, you know, I'm very happy with the outcome, maybe more so than the process. In terms of the decision to get rid of Franklin, like, you can't have people booing at halftime. You know, any relationship, I think this one had run its course. It was time to move on. There were some financial incentives. I think from my understanding of the contract, the way it was is, you know, we had this large buyout that was sort of hanging out there. But by firing Franklin earlier, you put him in a better position to find a job and in the process not owe him a lot of money that you could spend, you know, with NIL and going out your team. So if they were thinking about that strategically, I think that would be another reason to get rid of him when they did. So, you know, I'm just at this point, hey, look, I'm excited about the direction that we're going in. Good riddance to Franklin as far as I'm concerned. As I mentioned before, I have a graduate degree from Virginia. It's just another reason to root against Virginia Tech. I will be following him with that perspective in mind.
Well, it's also, first of all, I think you give them too much credit by saying they fired him when they did to get out from under the burden of the buyout. However, that was a positive result to it. And I actually think for Virginia Tech, it was a good hire. And I suspect, you know, James Franklin will do well at least the first couple years until the point comes where he wears out his welcome. And I suspect it will happen. Now, you said you have a degree from Virginia, you said?
I do.
So I just got to ask you, Bo Prabula, how are you feeling about that going to Virginia?
I think it's great for Virginia. I'm a little surprised that that's where he ended up. We can talk more about like the NIL process, but you know, they had also, I can't remember his name, but very coveted backup quarterback. I believe they were paying a lot of money from NIL. So I just wonder sort of what that conversation was like there. Cause you know, now can you afford to keep two quarterbacks? Was Prabula really testing the market? You know, at one time I was sort of optimistic back before the coaching search had resolved itself, you know, hey, are you going to bring Eli Drinkwitz, coach from Missouri, here as a package with Bo Prabula? You know, they go out and have a great season next year. It sort of like writes itself. You know, in hindsight, I think going the Campbell direction probably made more sense. You know, I think even talk about now the Iowa State quarterback coming in here. My guess is that makes a lot more sense too, even with Grunkenmeyer leaving. You know, he's familiar with the system. You know, and I think there's a lot to be said for that, particularly in that role. And I believe the Iowa State backup quarterback's coming here too. So in the event he goes down, you have somebody that knows the system. We talked a little about three stars. I believe that backup was a four-star guy. So, you know, right now, I guess I'm on the Campbell train. You know, I'll give him at least a year or two. But, you know, I'm optimistic for those reasons and more.
Well, we're going to get to the quarterback position because I think it's an interesting topic. But before we get there, let's talk about Matt Campbell a little bit. Now, you mentioned Eli Drinkwitz, who was one of the names that popped up. Remember, there was the coach from BYU got offered the job. That was one of them. Well, just real quick, what was your take on that?
I kept wondering at the time, you know, how is this going to work? Like culturally, it just didn't seem like the right fit, in my opinion. I mean, you know, this guy, Sataki, you know, he'd been such, it seemed like the right fit there for BYU. And you just kept wondering, at least I did in the back of my head, you know, is this guy just leveraging this to get a better offer? Unfortunately, I think that's exactly what he did. But you know, I just had a lot of sort of cultural fits. Is this going to work? And, you know, in hindsight, I'm glad it didn't.
Well, it's funny, if he did use it as leverage, he was not the first coach who did that.
Nor
will he be the last. That was pretty common. And one of the things I want to be careful of, because I got some of this reaction from listeners and I read these in a couple places, when we use the expression he wasn't a cultural fit, some folks twist that a bit. And what it is, in my opinion, was more geographic.
Sorry, that was more my, yeah, I just want to be clear. Like, wasn't anything against him being Mormon or, you know, anything like that. It's more had to do with viewpoint. Like, has this guy ever really coached here on the East Coast? Is he going to fit in with the recruiting? Does he have any familiarity with that? You know, for somebody who's never done that, you know, I think that's a steep hurdle. And people say Iowa State. Well, look, Campbell's from, you know, Ohio. And I believe he was coaching there before. So, You know, I think for him, it's more of a homecoming. And that's some, again, just looking for, you know, somebody that's going to understand the surrounding area and fit in. Because I think cultural fit is important for Penn State, and maybe more so than most programs. There's a lot to be proud of, and you want a coach that's going to embrace that. I think Campbell did a lot of that with his first press conference. That's something, again, adding to my list of things I didn't like about James Franklin. I don't think he ever did. And again, good riddance to him. But yeah, that's reason for optimism.
Yeah, and I think that's it. Not only does he have the Ohio background, but he has a Pennsylvania background, apparently, grandparents from Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. And I was particularly impressed with the fact his in coaching at Toledo in Ohio, he came into Pennsylvania to recruit. He knew Terry Smith through that, and he has the very much the, you know, the Pennsylvania kind of attitude. I described it, you know, Penn State is both a blue blood and blue collar, and he appears to fit that mold very well.
He does. The other thing he does, again, going back to things that Franklin never did, is he is embracing the proud tradition of Penn State. He's not pretending like the program never existed prior to him coming here. That was something Franklin did. I think, you know, trying to reunify a lot of the very large and proud Penn State fan base, I think that will go a long way. So that's something I'm excited about as well.
It is. And that's where also, you know, that association with Terry Smith that he talked about so well in that first press conference. And he also named so many Penn State. He mentioned Joe Paterno. He mentioned Todd Blackledge. He mentioned Kyle Brady. He mentioned, you know, the old time Penn State players that I think you're right. I think a lot of the, especially the older Penn State fans will really like that.
They will, and a lot of the older Penn State fans have a lot of the money, too. So when it comes down to NIL, I wouldn't dismiss that.
Yes, it's an excellent point. You want to get everybody on board, and James Franklin, I think, struggled with that. All right, Steve, that's going to be it for quarter number one. I'm going to try for the rest of the show not to mention James Franklin. We're going to look forward here, looking forward, not looking back, okay? But it had been such a long time since we'd seen. Well, I lied, because we will mention James Franklin, because I do want to get your take on the players going to Virginia Tech. But that's how I want to talk about it, not to be critical of James Franklin, all right? So that's our goal. We will do that when we come back after this break.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student-athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student-athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Happy Valley United, the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. For more info, go to happyvalleyunited.com.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number two. I'm Jim, he's Steve. We're talking Penn State football. Our good friend Steve hasn't been on the show in a while, so we're kind of getting caught up on things. And Steve, it sounds like you're very much in the Matt Campbell camp. So let's talk about what is going on in this whole transformation of the Penn State roster. I think it's approximately 50 players who have left the roster through the portal. And much of the incoming recruiting class also out the door, much of it to Virginia Tech. As I promised, let's hit that first. Forget the recruits for a second, but just the players that have made their way to Virginia Tech, starting with Ethan Grunkmeyer, Luke Reynolds. There's some quality players that are moving over, but the vast majority of them are the younger players, first or second year players. What are your thoughts on those players following James Franklin?
One, I think what you just said there at the end is very telling. It's the younger players that are going with him. So when you talk about Franklin's shtick and not really, you know, necessarily resonating after a few years, I think it's very notable that a lot of the more senior players decided not to follow him. You know, I was a little surprised that Grunkenmeyer went, candidly. Now, look, on the surface, it sort of makes sense. Franklin recruited him. Danny O'Brien developed him. I guess that would be my question for Grunkenmeyer is, do you really count on their being developed there when you've seen just the atrocious job Franklin and O'Brien have done in developing quarterbacks this year? I mean, you saw what they didn't do with Drew Aller. So, you know, if his family had asked me to go somewhere, that would not have been my recommendation. Look, for Reynolds, I think he was somebody that got passed over on the depth chart. I know that we're getting a good tight end there from Iowa State. He may have just seen the writing on the wall. So, you know, I just think at this point, it's more of addition through subtraction. Again, I would, between Grunkenmeyer, I know he improved at the end of the season. I was rooting for him like everybody else, particularly in that Pinstripe Bowl. Again, you know, from where he started to where he finished, you did see some noticeable development, but I would still take Rocco Becht if I were in Matt Campbell's shoes. He's familiar with the system. He's familiar with the program. You need to bring a lot of these guys from Iowa State over that you want, these senior leaders. That's the difference. You notice that the seniors are following, you know, Campbell here to Iowa State. That tells you something about them. They believe in him. Again, unlike Franklin, when you're trying to establish your culture, you know, recording this before the national championship, you know, you look at the Cignetti approach. He did a lot of this. He was bringing a lot of lower star guys at James Madison. So, you know, to me, it's just sort of symptomatic of where college football is now. We've had a lot of changes between NIL and the transfer portal. I don't know that situation is necessarily unique to Penn State. Obviously, in these transition years, you're going to have, you know, more turnover with the coaches and the players. That's sort of how I think about it. I think you think about it too with respect to the coaches. You know, Franklin, who was he able to pull over as from a coaching standpoint? You know, he offered Ty Howe a promotion to offensive coordinator. I think it was a good move for him. In the sense, he's going to be a coordinator. If you look at who Franklin was getting as defensive coordinator, was Brent Pry, the person that got fired before. So people say, oh, you know, Franklin's a loyal guy. That's one way of looking at it. I look at it as to, hey, if I'm an up-and-coming coach and I want to be a coordinator, being a coordinator for James Franklin's where your careers go to die. You just look at the track record here of a lot of the recent ones. It has not turned out well. Manny Diaz may have been a recent exception. He was smart enough to leave. So, you know, again, I think the facts sort of speak for themselves.
Well, I'm glad you at least you brought up Manny Diaz.
I know.
I don't look at it like, oh, he was smart to get out of here. I think he was smart. He took a head coaching job. I also think with Brent Pry, I look at it like he stayed at Virginia Tech. Sometimes these guys, you know, they're nomads moving place to place nonstop. I think for him, it was kind of like an opportunity. Hey, I don't have to pick up and move. I don't know what his status is as far as children, but he's been at Virginia Tech. He's been in Blacksburg for a few years, and maybe he just wasn't ready to jump into another head coach job, maybe at a lower level, by sticking around defensive coordinator. Hey, if he does well, he being James Franklin's defensive coordinator at one point got him the head job at Virginia Tech. So it had worked for him before.
I think we're saying the same thing. I think, you know, for Howe and Pry, it was attractive. I don't think for anybody else. And you just look at the new defense coordinator for Penn State, Danton Lynn. Franklin tried to hire him and couldn't get him. Matt Campbell can't. The only thing that changed there was Franklin left. I mean, what was your conclusion? Because you know what mine is.
Well, I think sometimes there's more to these stories, but I will look at it as you did. I'll take the positive spin that Matt Campbell was able to get this guy who was very attractive. We also know, as we saw with Jim Knowles, who was very attractive, oftentimes money's a big part of it. Now, I do want to circle back and talk about Ethan Grunkenmeyer. When this was coming up and we knew Matt Campbell was going to have a choice, you know, Rocco Becht, his veteran guy who's been around for several years, or Ethan Grunkenmeyer, who apparently he had a relationship with before because he tried to recruit him. And on the surface, maybe it was partially in my heart, I liked Grunkenmeyer. I liked what he showed. If that was the choice, I was kind of leaning the Grunkmeyer way, although it was probably a bit of my Penn State bias. But I'll tell you what changed my mind, and you brought it up, Steve. The backup quarterback from Iowa State came in. His name's Alex Mansky. You mentioned that he was a four-star. His ratings were all over the place, four-star, three-star. But here's the difference. Matt Campbell got to see him. Now, it was a redshirt year. He didn't get on the field, but he saw him on the practice field for a year. He had the skill set that he recruited him. And after watching him on the practice field for a year, he's like saying, yeah, that's my future guy. And again, credit to Matt Campbell, because these are all two-way decisions. Alex Mansky said, I want to follow Matt Campbell, despite the fact that I know I'm going to have to sit for a year. That, to me, is a great compliment to Matt Campbell. Where I'm headed with all this is, it's not Rocco Beck versus Grunkmeyer. It's Rocco Beck and Mansky versus Grunkmeyer. And guess which one I'll take, the way it turned out, Steve?
Yeah, I think you're right to think about it as the quarterback room, not necessarily the starter.
Yes, yes. And you mentioned about Grunkmeyer following Virginia Tech. That's not what you would advise. The only issue I had with it with Grunkmeyer was already the quarterback from North Carolina, Bryce Baker, had already come into Virginia Tech. One of those two quarterbacks going to be very unhappy this coming year.
I thought Grunkmeyer was going to go to Cincinnati personally. But, you know, maybe this is sort of a contest for the spring, and whoever is on the short end of the stick there may end up entering the portal again. I don't know.
Well, remember, the portal window only opens once now this year.
Okay, well, there you go. So, again, all the more reason not to go to Virginia Tech.
Well, yeah, that to me was the reason why not. And it's one of these things with these quarterback jobs. You want to be the starter so that you get starter money. You know, Bo Prabula, don't know if he ever really wanted to leave Penn State, but he wanted to be a starter. Don't blame him from going to Missouri, but he's already then moves on from Missouri to Virginia. And I was holding off on this for later, but I'll bring it up now. This whole deal with the quarterbacks is, I don't know if you saw this just recently, Duke paid a lot of money for their quarterback this past season. They brought him in, I think, from Tulane. And now it was assumed he was going to stick around, but apparently the last day of the portal, he jumped ship, and he's going to Miami for a huge, huge deal, leaving kind of Duke in the cold because Duke thought they had their quarterback. It's cutthroat out there, Steve.
It is, and I'm sort of torn, you know, because I work in the private sector, and it sort of is what it is in terms of, you know, you have a right to get compensated for your talents. People might, you know, assign different values to that. So to each his own. That said, you know, this is sort of a wild, wild west here. And something I think that you and Andy talked about, I believe on your last episode, that I agree with, is one solution here is sort of these multi-year contracts with the buyout. I think that's the way around it, because it is sort of silly to sort of see these guys literally like transferring team to team every year. Again, you know, maybe once, maybe twice makes sense, but have these high value guys do it. I think the multi-year contract, again, that's what they do in official professional leagues. It's essentially what we're becoming in college football. So you might as well get there, and perhaps they will.
Well, yeah, that to me is the solution, and it doesn't have to go through any court system and get, you know, any exemptions or I don't even think you have to go through collective bargaining. And I had someone say, well, what if the player doesn't want to sign a multi-year contract?
He doesn't have to.
Right, exactly. He's betting on himself.
You can make more money in betting on yourself to get a payday. Like, that's how it works. That's called
the American way. And again, you know, you mentioned private industry. Have you ever worked under a contract where you had like a multi-year contract in private industry?
I have not.
I have. Okay. I had a 5-year contract. I was gone in less than 2 years when things went south. There was a buyout though. Okay. So that's how contracts work. And to me, I kind of look at that as not just a solution, but essentially the solution to this. And I feel like it's these couple seasons, these couple years, it's kind of a feeling out that somehow they'll figure it out. Right now it's the Wild West, but I think it'll get cleared up, if not in a year, in a couple years.
I hope so. I mean, something needs to be done. What we're in right now really isn't sustainable to do this and try to keep the level of interest needed in college football, in my opinion.
Well, we're going to talk about that a little bit more later. I want to get back to this Penn State team and the number of players that have come over from Iowa State. I know there are some people in a derogatory way. They call this Ames East, okay, in State College. It's Ames, Iowa. It's going to be the Iowa State team. I feel a little bit different about it. I want to get your take on it, though, Steve, right after this break. I'm kind of positive about it. I want to know if the glass half empty kind of guy that you are, how you feel about this. We'll find out when we come back.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student-athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student-athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Happy Valley United, the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. For more info, go to happyvalleyunited.com.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number 3. With us is our old friend Steve Pavlik. I'm Jim Galante. Steve, I tease the, Ames, Iowa East here with bringing in over 20 players from Iowa State. I'm going to give you my quick theory. I think Matt Campbell is cherry picking the best players. I mean, there were essentially the entire Iowa State team hit the portal. And Matt Campbell, outside of a couple of exceptions, I think he pretty much had his pick of the litter. He picked the guys that he wanted and brought them here. And I'm saying, good. That's good for Penn State football. What say you?
I do too. I think it's great, actually. You say it's good. I say it's great. The reason I say it's great is I think there's a real good culture at Iowa State of overachievement. Again, I know you don't want to do this, being the antithesis of the Franklin era, but I think that's appealing. What did Iowa State do last year? They beat Iowa. Now, I know Penn State fell a little short, but how many years under Franklin with more talent did we have were lost to Iowa? In the case of Iowa State versus Iowa, Iowa State was the team that was less talent. And Campbell continually had a good record there against Iowa when he was coaching. And that's pretty that's impressive to me because I think Ferentz is a pretty good coach. It comes down to these game day decisions. So getting more with less, I think that is something that we all strive for after all these years of getting less with more. So I think sort of establishing that culture, that's what you do. You bring the leaders, the best players from your previous program. And it's not just speculation on my part. Hey, will this work out? You'll see it. You've seen it in practice with Indiana. Okay, Cignetti brought these guys in from James Madison. I'm sure people in Bloomington weren't thrilled about becoming Harrisonburg North or whatever you want to call it, to use your analogy. But, it turned out to work out pretty well for them. And a lot of those guys weren't 5 stars either. I don't know that Cignetti's ever had a 5-star. So, this infatuation, fascination with this, maybe I'm still drinking the Kool-Aid. But I'm willing to give the guy the benefit of the doubt. And I think when you talk about establishing a culture, that really starts with those guys in the locker room. And, I'm optimistic. I think there's been more probably, if I'm reading the portal correctly, I think players on the offensive side of the ball than the defensive side of the ball. And I think that's probably a good thing because, you know, I think there was probably more concern, in my opinion, on the defensive side where you might need some more athletic players in certain areas than what you saw from the Iowa State defense. And that's where I think also bringing in somebody, Danton Lynn from USC, somebody who has experience in the Big Ten, comes from a proud NFL coaching lineage. I think that's also a good move on his part from the hiring perspective. So, you know, he sort of, I think he's trying to bring in the right concepts, more of this offensive scheme and playbook, and then sort of taking some good players on the defensive side. I know they brought over some of their better linebackers and the like, but looking for areas where they need to, you know, supplement the players to deal with the Big Ten schedule. So I know you like me to be the glass half empty, but I'm still with Campbell going to be glass half full.
Yeah. Who are you? And what did you do with Steve?
New Year's resolution.
I kind of like it, except we're agreeing too much. I like that you pointed out that many of the players are on the offensive side and at the skilled positions. Quarterbacks, plural, running back, couple tight ends, several wide receivers, all coming over from Iowa State. But remember, you're also complementing these players that came over with Andrew Rappelier with the tight ends, Quentin Martin among the running backs, on the offensive line, Cooper Cousins, Anthony Donka are sticking around. So those are talents. It's not just Iowa State players. You're getting some very good Penn State players. And Steve, I think one of the other things that gets lost in this shuffle, 50 Penn State players hit the portal. Well, guess what? That also is not just a one-way street with the players leaving. That's also the new coaching staff saying, you, we want you to stay. You, we're okay with you leaving. There's the door. There's the portal. And, I don't mean to name names in this negative connotation, but you can't help it. As Penn State fans and someone who follows the team so closely, a couple years ago, we were all really excited about these two highly regarded offensive linemen by the name of Javen Williams and Alex Birchmeyer. Well, guess what? One's going to Charlotte, one's going to Liberty. Correct me if I'm wrong, Steve, but they're not the blue bloods, are they?
No, but I think it's an interesting point that you may or may not have intended to raise, and that's just sort of where the emphasis is going to be on recruiting moving forward. I mean, looking back to the Indiana model, you know, it's more of an emphasis on these transfer portal people as opposed to the high school recruiting. Now, ultimately, you're probably going to have the right mix of both, but you're taking a chance a lot of times with these high school players because, you know, you don't know how they're going to perform against more comparable collegiate level competition. You know, at least when you're evaluating people in the portal, you sort of see, okay, this is how somebody's sort of performing at that level. When you're 6'5 and 300 pounds in high school, it's a lot easier to move around a lot of those guys that are about half your size. When you get to the collegiate level, it's a lot harder. So, you know, in those two instances that you mentioned, that may have played a role. But again, I think that's something to be watched moving forward, not just Penn State, but again, going back to sort of how Cignetti approached things at Indiana, maybe you're going to just see more emphasis on this, you know, transfer portal, you know, assessing people, maybe less emphasis on the high school recruiting.
I think you're right. And it's a great theory. I had a colleague here say, Kurt Cignetti has ruined the game for a lot of coaches, but he has completely changed the model. You know, we've been watching for the last several years, the blue chip ratio. To win a national championship, the blue chip ratio says the majority of your scholarship players need to be 4 or 5-star blue chip players. And he went through, you know, you go through the history, every national champion has done that. Well, guess what? Indiana's changing that model. And again, I'll look bad if they lose, you know, Monday night, but they have 8 blue chip players. Oregon had like 50 some. Has the model just plain changed?
Well, I mean, a couple things come to mind. I mean, one is it an indictment of the star rating and just, you know, the whole like camp circuit and whatnot, or greater emphasis there. You know, some kid runs 2 seconds of a or 2/10 of a second faster than a 40, but has a poor attitude. You know, I don't know. There could be something to that. But again, going back to, you know, if you're not sure about these high school evaluations, you know, doing apples to apples comparison, using their performance at a collegiate level, I think it is much more proven. And I think that's where Cignetti, you know, maybe onto something. It may have been forced out of necessity, you know, to his credit, he adapted, and it's just sort of where we are. And then look, I think there's another issue here with NIL. I mean, if you're recruiting a five-star, the expectation on his part is he's going to want to play right away. And he might not be in a position to, particularly if you're talking about offensive, defensive line, just in terms of the physical development. So then you're going to allocate your resources to bring this guy in, but he's probably going to leave. Does it make more sense if you're talking about the allocation of dollars, which is now part of the game, to again wait and say, okay, look, that may be too high risk, high reward. We can't afford that. Let's just see how these guys sort of pan out. Maybe again, take a chance at the portal. I don't know. But, you know, again, that's another way of looking at it and something you have to consider now in this environment.
That's an excellent point. You know, it's that how do you allocate your dollars? Because there's a finite number, even among the blue bloods. And you see some of those blue bloods, like Ohio State had the lowest number of portal starters on their roster in within the playoff. Both Miami and Indiana had over 50% of their starters come from the portal. Ohio State, I think, was in the teens. Stark difference. And I want to throw a theory at you. The last couple of years, we saw Michigan and Ohio State win national championships. And we thought the model was they kept their team together. And that's why we were excited about this year's Penn State team. They fit that model. What if the model is, Steve, not, oh, that you kept the team together, but that you had veterans, guys who had played, had plenty of experience? Because if you look at Indiana's team, they weren't just built on portal guys. They were built on veterans, guys with experience. And just as, you know, quarterbacks are always the stark example. I looked up Fernando Mendoza's year as a recruit, high school recruit. He went to Cal. Okay. Among quarterbacks, okay, not the entire high school class, just among quarterbacks, okay? Where was he rated? What number was he among quarterbacks? You can tell by the way I'm asking. He wasn't first or second or third. Guess for me. Play the game with me.
25.
25. Come on, Steve. He was 134th.
Wow. No, that's. Well, I'll go back to what are you evaluating? Okay. You're talking about, you know, compare him to like Aller. Okay. You can just tell from anytime you hear Mendoza talk that he's pretty intelligent. He got into Cal. He's obviously not an idiot, not derogatory against Aller, but just from the upside. Somebody's willing to work those intangibles, okay? Particularly at that position, that ought to account for something. I think, you know, what you're alluding to, too, with these senior teams or senior-led teams, rather, going back to, I know you're a big basketball fan, some of these, what we see in the tournament every year. You know, you have these, you know, sort of one and done former Kentucky model under Calipari versus against a Princeton team with like five seniors, and suddenly it's a close game. So maybe that's sort of catching on. I thought you were going to say with Ohio State and Michigan, you know, winning the last two championships. Now with NIL, you know, before the SEC was the only everybody. Now that it's, you know, everybody's doing it, suddenly there's no advantage there. So even at ESPN, maybe that was pretty stupid time.
Well, I think that is part of the argument. But here, you know, I think if you gave me a choice between a five-star quarterback out of high school or a three-star, I'll take the five-star. I will. But if you give me my choice, how about let me evaluate these players after they've been in college for 2 or 3 years? Then let me redo the evaluation. And after 2 or 3 years, you know, and give Kurt Cignetti a lot of credit. I didn't see a lot of other schools knocking down, you know, Fernando Mendoza's door to get to him. But Kurt Cignetti did. He knew.
And it was the second time he's hit on a quarterback in the transfer portal, too, something that a lot of teams have failed to do. So I think you're hitting on something, which is he will, Cignetti, apply his own sort of reevaluation as to, like, you know, I don't care what the 4 or 5 stars were for high school. I'm assessing this as to your sort of collegiate performance, and, you know, I will assign my own rankings here. And again, maybe people will borrow a similar approach moving forward, and that'll be up to Campbell. We'll see.
All right. That is the final word for quarter three. One more segment to go. Stick with us.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Happy Valley United, the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student athletes at Penn State. For more info, go to happyvalleyunited.com.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number four. He's Steve, I'm Jim. Between segments, I was just proving how old I am because I was asking Steve, what was the last thing we talked about? I've already forgotten. It's only been a couple minutes. But anyway, I did want to talk to you, Steve, about the game in general, because college football has really changed. You have Indiana and Miami in the college football final. Okay, there's that change. There's the transfer portal where, you know, guys are, some of them are entering their fifth, sixth school. Penn State, one of the transfer players from UCLA, he spent 7 years at UCLA, Steve, and he's got another year at Penn State that upcoming. I guess my question to you is the game going to hell or are we okay?
It's definitely evolved a lot since I was playing. You know, I think it's a matter of opinion, whether it's for the better or for the worse. Look, I think, candidly, culturally, like the trade-off, I think is worse. I think there was something we said before as to, you know, aligning the players when I was growing up in the 80s, 90s, they were more like your typical college kids. And because of that, there was more affinity for them. You know, you rooted for these players because you went to school with them. You saw them out. And now it's been trending this way. And I think, to your point, things like NIL and the transfer portal have only expedited this. Like, you know, they don't really feel attached to them. You don't feel a part of them. They're becoming professionals. So you, because you have that detachment, you feel the right to criticize them and boo them and the like. So, you know, I don't know that that's necessarily good. I remember that cheesy commercial, you know, most of the people in college sports are going pro in something other than the sport they're playing. So that's sort of a word of caution for some of these folks. But, you know, at the same flip side of that is, you know, because of that, if they have an opportunity to make money, they're probably gonna make more money now than they ever will in their life. So I don't fault anybody for taking it. I'm just sort of resigned to the fact where, you know, this is sort of the direction we're headed. You know, the actual product on the field, you know, you may not necessarily know that the people in the uniforms, you're still, you feel the affinity to the school, allegiance to the program, still inclined to root for them. But yeah, I think, you know, the student and the student athlete has really lost a lot of emphasis. And I suspect that it's going to continue that way. And like the toothpaste is out of the tube. I just think it's very difficult to get it back. I think, you know, to your point, recognizing this, it's about how can we try to fix it so it doesn't continue to trend more in the direction of the NFL. Because at the end of the day, college football can't compete directly with the NFL. You just can't. So that's why I'd like to see them to try to, you know, embrace more of what makes college football special. Whether that's doing the on-campus games, you know, in the playoffs, things like that, getting the band, things like that, you know, involved, you know, these rivalries, you know, between the schools. I think they probably diminished a little bit before because, you know, that was sort of built up over time, sort of embedded. By the time you're a senior, you've already been indoctrinated to that. You know, if you're only transferring, or maybe you came from the school, you know, you leave Michigan to Ohio State. I mean, that would have been unheard of in the Woody and Bo War years, but, you know, we are where we are. So I'm just sort of rambling here. I don't have a good answer for you, but that's sort of my thoughts.
I have, you know, mixed emotions, like so many things. It's not black and white. There's, I think, some of the great things, first of all, that it is Indiana and Miami playing for the national championship. I think that's a great thing for college football. For about a decade, Georgia, Alabama, Ohio State, and some random team, that was the Final Four. Now, hey, we're going 3 years in a row now without a Southeast Conference school in the national championship game. For that alone, I like the changes. I also like, and I had this debate with a friend of the family about, oh, college, it's not the same, players getting paid. Well, were you happy when all those millions of dollars went to coaches and administrators and nothing went to the guys in the arena, the guys who actually played? So, I actually think that's a good thing that players are getting money. And I don't think it's a negative that they're getting a lot of money. I could live with that. But playing at five different schools in 5 years, I don't like that. But like we talked about earlier, I think there's fixes for that. I think the multi-year contract is the best fix, and it's something that could be implemented right away. So although I understand the emotion that people have, and the point that you made is a great one, and it's the one that I can't debate, is there, it used to be these guys, you'd see them in your class, and you may even become friends with them. And over time, I do also wonder, though, for the players, I have nothing against Bo Prabula. I would have done exactly what he did. But I wonder if in 40 years from now, and I think it was our colleague Chris Buccanani, he says, 40 years from now when he's talking to his grandchildren, yeah, back in 24, I made that decision to abandon my school and go to Missouri, as opposed to, you come back to State College every year, you meet your buddies, and there's that feeling of belonging someplace.
No, I think you're hitting on something. You think about your college experience, you have what you're supposed to learn in the classroom, but you're also part of your education is in that development, socially in who you surround yourself with. And I just can't help but wonder, you're transferring to multiple schools. Do you somehow deprived of that? I do think we've seen the balance of power probably shift, maybe away from more the coaches and the athletic parts, more towards the players. And I think you're right to point out that it's not necessarily a bad thing. Finding that sweet spot of where it should be is probably right. And probably going to get there. And I think, you made a good point that I agree with too. You had this sort of these, say, blue bloods was this concentration of talent, for many years, and that's why we always saw the same teams year after year, make it to the highest echelons in college football. And now that, you have NIL in the transfer portal, there's more parity. And I think more parity is more attractive to a broader audience. Obviously, the NFL sort of prides itself in that. So that's probably a good thing. And, I just think back to whether it was Bear Bryant or Nick Saban, this idea of just sort of like stacking players, like that's just no longer an option unless you just have an unlimited checkbook. But even then, I'm not sure it's an option.
Well, and that's the next question, that unlimited checkbook, the quarterback who it appears is leaving Duke for Miami. I saw one, and I don't know if it was a guess or not, saying it could be worth like up to $10 million. These quarterbacks are making more money in college than they would in the NFL. And I don't know, is there going to be a point where, we're looking for a return on our investment. And, the donors who are constantly coming up with money, yeah, someone's going to be really happy. And I suspect the donors at Indiana are pretty happy right now. But that leaves a lot of other schools where they're not so happy.
I would think so. I mean, I've always just wondered, this idea, that's really how you want to spend your money. I sort of understood before, supporting the program, not just supporting this particular player. And then, if you sort of get somebody to commit there and then they leave, does that sour you on the whole process? You just put your hands up, say, I'm not doing this again. I don't know. I mean, as someone who works with investors, I know I wouldn't be interested in pursuing something like that. But it's just... right now, it's just not in a good spot. It's this transition. and hopefully solutions will make it better, but I just don't know that it's sustainable in its current form.
One other item that came up, I just wanted to get your take on it. It has to go through another rules committee, but the coaches association, the coaches get together, they introduce ideas for rule changes. One of them they came up with is, I thought one of the great things they did was then they changed the redshirt rule where you can play four games and still maintain your redshirt. The talk now is they want to suggest 9 games before you burn your redshirt. What are your thoughts on that rule change?
I know that's an opening offer, sort of like we really want 6, we're going to ask for 9 just so we could sort of like back into that. I mean, with injuries and things, I think, you know, 4 is maybe a little, you know, room to expand it. But 9, I mean, at that point, you only play 12 games in a regular season, I believe. So, you know, that seems high to me. If you wanted to move from 4 to 6, I'd be okay with that. More than that, you know, it's sort of like, wait, are we just giving these guys official like carte blanche here 5 years? I don't know.
Well, that was my thinking, because right now with the 4 games, you pick and choose what games they would play. If they switch it to 9 games, you'll pick and choose what games they don't play. So if I have a freshman, you know, you look at most Power 4 conferences, they play 3 games against Podunk, their first 3 games of the year. Doesn't matter. You know what? If I have a freshman who's really good, I hold them out of the first 3 games. And then they can play the next 9 when it matters and play through the postseason.
Where do you hold them out so nobody in the portal is going to take them? I guess when I started thinking about that pendulum swinging, it goes back to the players. The players, you know, people say, oh, the players don't want to do this. No, I think they do, because I think it's more opportunities to present your talents to go out and get a bigger payday somewhere else. So, again, unfortunately, I hope I'm wrong, but I think that's where the mindset is headed right now, which we talked about earlier. This idea of these multi-year contracts to maybe try to disincentivize that way of thinking is probably a good thing.
Yeah, to me, that's practically the only solution. And if you're going to do 9 games allowed for a redshirt year, just say instead of having 5 years to play 4, 5 years, you play 5 years.
I agree, because essentially that's what you're doing. But that's, again, the NTA and the coaching, I mean, everything always tries to be too cute by half, and it ends up biting them more in the end.
Yeah, it's you could lose a lot of money if you were betting on the NCAA in any of these lawsuits, because they keep coming up. You know what, Steve? I'll tell you what, this has been a lot of fun. We got half a minute left. I'm going to give it to you. Is there anything we missed today that you wanted to share with us?
No, I would just say respect to the season. Look, give Campbell a chance. There's a lot of reason for hope after a lot of years of hype. I think the schedule lines up nicely, and, you know, just, I guess, be open-minded, and, you know, we're still pulling for Penn State despite all the changes in football, and I'm optimistic about the future of the program.
There you heard it for the first time. We've got glass half full, Steve. You know what? I kind of like this, Steve.
Well, look, if they go like 2-10, then I'll probably revert to form.
Well, hopefully, and with that schedule, they better not go 2-10, Steve. All right. Thank you, Steve. Thank all of you for listening. Make sure you join us again next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student-athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student-athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.